This is Oklahoma Perspective. The Oklahoma Medical Marijuana Authority has a new communications director. Terry Watkins was recently installed in that position, and she talked to KRMG's Russell Mills about her job and what the authority does.
I was interested about how the patient registration numbers are going, and as we're getting towards the end of the year, what are you seeing? Is it tapering off, or is it staying steady? Is it going up? Where are we at?
Patient numbers, Russell, are going up. What I have is in 2018, understanding that Medical Marijuana Authority didn't come into existence until August of that year, we had about 27,000 people that were participating. And the number grew from kind of the middle of 2019 to 194,583. That is the number as of December 3rd. And that makes the total patient licenses out there of 221,657.
Okay, so basically there was a huge ramp up at the beginning, obviously, because, we started at ground zero. It ramped up pretty swiftly. It kind of leveled off, but what I hear you saying is that it hasn't stopped and that there are still quite a few applications coming in.
Well, right now, there are still applications coming in, but the 221,000 will be pretty close to the number for this year. And so we saw a massive increase in 2019. So the big question will be, because we have a full year's worth of numbers there, the interesting question will be, what does it look like 2019 to the end of 2020, when we have a full year of data to work on?
Are we seeing any sort of demographic trends? And I don't even know if you guys are tracking any of this, but as far as, I don't know, particular age groups, particular, parts of the state. Is any of that number crunching being done yet?
The number crunching is always being done. I haven't seen any demographics on age. What I can tell you is what you would expect. The majority of the applications are coming from the metropolitan areas, the Oklahoma City metropolitan area and the Tulsa metropolitan area. And of course, Lawton is got quite a few, as does Enid and some of the other larger communities.
Are we still seeing a fairly steady number of new businesses or requests for new business licenses, or has that tapered off?
That is starting to taper off a little bit. I mean, it went from just over 2,500 or just close to 2,500 in 2018 to at right about 8,800 right now. 8,800 right now. There are still some coming in. Those, again, we will have a full year of numbers on those. I think they were seeing a little bit of a drop, but we need that January to the end of December to be able to tell everything. And we're almost there. They, unlike patient licenses, business licenses have to be renewed every year.
Right.
So what we're going to see in the business area is how many businesses continued from 2019 to 2020.
And there's the key, right? Because while 8,800 businesses may have applied for licenses, it's unlikely that all 8,800 of them actually, opened for business, and even more unlikely that all of them, stayed in business over here. In fact, I know of at least a couple here in the metro that have dispensaries that have already come and gone. So,
we're not going to know until we actually see the numbers, because while we're doing compliance on the stores that are open and that is starting up, then it's hard to get a feel for the numbers. So we need a full year's worth of number. Actually, we need 2 full years worth of numbers to begin doing comparison.
The new communications director for the Oklahoma Medical Marijuana Authority, Terry Watkins. The Broadway stage play Miss Saigon ends its run in Tulsa this evening. Recently, KRMG's Ben Morgan talked to Emily Bautista and Anthony Festa about the production.
All right, so Anthony, I asked you first last time, so let's go ahead and start with your background in, plays, musicals, acting, and all that, and then we'll go from there.
Sure, yeah. I've been performing now professionally for probably around 10 years. Been in a lot of different productions professionally that you would know of. West Side Story as Tony, Wicked the Musical, Finding Neverland. I came here with Tulsa with, which was a lot of fun. I'm happy to be back. I'm happy for this town to experience this show again, or to experience this show. Yeah, and I started when I was five. You know, my mom got me involved in the arts. And one of the roles that really kind of gave me the bug to do theater was when I was about 12, I did The Artful Dodger in Oliver, and I got the response from the crowd during Consider Yourself, and I was like, oh, I think I want to do this. This is cool, you know? So, yeah.
And then Emily, how did you get your start?
Sure. So I've just always been singing ever since I was little. My parents always like to joke that I sang before I spoke. And so I just always loved being in front of people and loved singing for people. My dad would bring me into the office and I'd stand up on the tables and sing Tomorrow from Annie. And I kind of just always had that theater bug. But I started doing it professionally maybe 3 years ago, and so I've been in the business for three years now. But I studied a lot in high school, and that's where I got the bulk of my training. I went to a performing arts high school, and then I moved to Ithaca, New York to go to college for about a year, and I ended up moving down to the city my sophomore year of college after being offered the Kim understudy for the Miss Saigon revival. And then from there, I went to the Les Mis tour for a little bit, and then back onto the Miss Saigon tour.
And so, are you playing the character Kim in Miss Saigon?
I am, yes.
So tell me about your character, and then sort of about the play in general for people who may not know what Miss Saigon is.
Sure. So the story of Miss Saigon follows the last couple of days of the Vietnam War. It kind of centralizes around our two characters. And so my character, Kim, is a 17-year-old girl who was orphaned by the war. Her village was bombed and burned. She moves to Ho Chi Minh City, as it's now called, and falls in love with an American GI, Chris. But during the evacuation of Saigon, they get separated, and 3 years later, we find out that she is actually with child. And that child, she spends the rest of the show protecting him and trying to take him out of Vietnam. And it follows her story as well as all the Vietnamese and the American GIs during this time period.
So, Anthony, you played the American GI.
That's me.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit about your character.
Chris, who meets Kim, he's re-upped for a second term, as I say in one of my favorite songs that I get to sing every night, Why God Why. And he's kind of re-upped for a second term because of just the chaos in general. And one of the crazy things about that war was you either made the choice to kind of lose your mind and jump into things there or leave and get out if you could. And he re-ups for another term and ends up falling in love with Kim at a brothel house. And he's always, my character's always trying to do the right thing and always trying to do good. He realizes that he finds something special in this girl that he's met, that she's different, that she's not like all the other girls. And I think it definitely sparks something inside of him. And this story kind of takes off from there.
What is it about this story that keeps Miss Saigon, you know, we get further and further away from the Vietnam War.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is it about this story that keeps it coming back to audiences? And
definitely. Yeah, well, I think a lot of the messages that we tell in our story still ring true today. And, you know, as much as we'd like to think that this kind of sex trafficking that Kim has to gets caught in order to survive the Vietnam War, it's so sad to think about, but it is still relevant today.
The statistics are alarming about sex trafficking today. If you just look it up, it's insane.
We met someone who actually runs an undercover initiative to help free people from sex slavery. Mm-hmm. But those things are still very common in today, and I think it's something that's not talked about. So I think our show does a really good job at bringing to light these kind of issues, but also bringing to light the women we represent that are strong and do this in order to provide for their family, to save a child, to flee a war-torn country. I think another big thing is that you know, the world's not perfect, but our show shows that love prevails. And our two characters meet in a brothel house, don't speak the same language, and still are able to fall in love.
And for me, I mean, also, you, the reason that Claude-Michel Schoenberg and Alain Boubile, who are our composer and lyricist, wrote the music and score for this is because it was based on a picture. And it was a picture of a Vietnamese woman who was giving her child away to an American soldier just for a better life. Now, if you can imagine that, that still rings true today. You look at all the families that are being separated because of the immigration laws right now and everything that is currently occurring now in the news, and it correlates to me. It's just the direct correlation, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy question, and I don't mean to spread bad juju or anything, but do y'all still get nervous when you take the stage?
You know, it's funny you ask that now because we just had a two-week break. So we just had a two-week layoff, and when we come back from a two-week layoff, yes.
Yeah, definitely.
So if you come to the show tonight, there'll be real nerves.
Yes.
And we hope you do come tonight. But yeah, of course. We never go out there and do the same thing every night.
Yeah.
It's never a robotic treatment. It's, you know, my character has evolved since I started doing this show, and because I've evolved. You know, and I think that's what makes a good actor is somebody who brings their own life experiences into their roles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely been fun. And our creative team, who is phenomenal at making these roles about us and bringing out the best that they can in us, has also allowed us to dig in and change. Mm-hmm. And they'll come out every once in a while and still offer up new ideas.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And that's what I think that's what's awesome about our show.
Yeah, it is. It stays fresh and it stays new. You know, every night, the two of us, as well as all of our other cast members, come into the show with a new energy and a new, just new ideas every night. So it does. It changes very minutely, but it keeps it fresh and alive for us. So hopefully it keeps it fresh and alive for the audience as well.
So, Anthony, you mentioned earlier that you had a favorite song. It's the Why God Why. Or maybe that was not your favorite, but a song you like performing. Is there a particular part of the play that you say is your favorite part, sequence, or song, or anything that you really like doing?
I love singing Why God Why every night because we've really made this version an acting piece and a monologue piece, which is what it is originally. And after going to Vietnam recently, this past summer, Emily and I were lucky enough to go to Vietnam and visiting the War Remnants Museum and taking in the perspective of the war there in Vietnam versus the perspective that we learn here in the States. It was kind of mind-blowing to me. And I sing about how beautiful this country is, but how messed up it is at the same time. And I sit there and I smoke a cigarette. I call it my scene partner, and I relax and I have a conversation with the audience about what I'm going through. And then I open up my heart to them by the end of it and my struggle to them. And it's definitely a fun moment for me because if I can feel when they come with me on the journey. And it's definitely changed for me after visiting Vietnam.
And then Emily, do you have a favorite song or moment in the play?
Yeah, I do. It's the pivotal moment of the show where it's called the nightmare sequence, and Kim is remembering the day that her and Chris were separated during the evacuation. So that scene, it's so powerful, and it's just. I can't even describe what kind of feeling you get just being surrounded by a full cast, a booming orchestra that's playing the most luscious, dramatic music by Claude-Michel Schoenberg and Alain Boubile. That whole scene, the way it functions, it takes every single person in the company to put that scene together. And what you get is such a heartbreaking moment of history. We have a helicopter that comes in and takes the GIs out of Saigon. And you actually get to see that all happen. You get to see the Vietnamese trying to get in into the embassy. But it really does take you there. And like Anthony was saying, when we went this past summer to Vietnam and actually stood at the embassy gates, it just made it all the more real. It's just such a crucial part of the Vietnam War that we get to experience
every
night.
American history as well.
In American history, yeah. There were a lot of Americans involved. And, you know, that scene, I think, just the beauty of theater and everyone coming together, but also the historical part of it and mm-hmm. portraying that every night. It just always hits me. Yeah.
In some people's minds, this part of American history may not be our finest hour. Mm-hmm. Is this a tough story to tell?
Oh, yeah.
It is. But you know what? I think being an American and especially researching and watching the documentaries, it's so hard because what I've learned is that when you're in a war, the moral compass is kind of just everywhere. You're taking orders and you see people trying to do the right thing, but really, what is the right thing? Is it following your country? Is it following your own personal beliefs? It's just, it wasn't an easy time, and it's hard to put myself in those shoes and to say, well, what would I do? Because I don't know, you see that much destruction and that much chaos. It's your brain. I think it's hard to decipher things, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, when we went to the War Remnants Museum, one of the things that kind of stays with me is there was these two brothers who went to the Vietnam War together, and one of them wrote a poem, and the title of the poem was "His Name Is Not on Your Wall." And I was like, okay, that's interesting. So I read it, and it was "His Name Is Not on Your Wall." And I read through this entire poem, and the two brothers went to war together, and they both left war. And after the war, the poem states, in the end, you learn he took his own life. And he took his own life because the war had messed him up to the point that he couldn't live a normal life anymore. He had experienced too much death and destruction and chaos, and that it had driven him to this terrible place. And normal life didn't seem right to him anymore. And when you read that, it kind of like, it settles with you and it sits with you in an interesting way. And, you know, we put costumes on and I put a GI uniform on and boots every night and jump into a helicopter. But these guys really went through this. They really did that, you know, and I try to bring that into the show every night.
Do y'all have vets that come to the show? I mean, do they reach out?
Yeah.
You know, it's so interesting that you asked that, because I've done South Pacific before and I've played Lieutenant Cable. In the war vets of that war are always proud to come and say hello and shake your hand. And this war is a little different. Mm-hmm. This war is a little different. In the year and a half that I've been doing it, I probably have met 2 to 3 vets. I have the line in the show in the middle of my song, "Why God Why," in the bridge, and it's this war was televised. So it was the first war that everybody saw on TV, and it was ugly. And they weren't treated well when they came back to America by Americans. And so I feel like people who were in that war still carry that with them, believe it or not. So it's not something that I see a lot. And this is just me speaking the honest truth to you. It's not something I see a lot at the stage door. But when I do, or I see a, you know, Vietnam War veteran hat or a gentleman who, you know, was in the war, and we've had like 2 or 3, they're usually crying.
Yeah.
They're usually breaking down crying. And it's because it's real.
Yeah.
And it wasn't easy for them.
Yeah. We've met a lot of children of vets that mm-hmm. like to come forward and talk and, you know, share their side of the story and, you know, talk about their fathers or their uncles that went over. We've also gotten to meet a lot of refugees that fled Vietnam during this time period. And that in itself is so eye-opening. And because a lot of the people we've met, they were children when it all happened. They were children that got on that last helicopter, that snuck on the boats. And a couple of people in our cast, their parents themselves were refugees as well.
And what's crazy is, like we say about the evacuation and when everybody's leaving Vietnam, it was literally an evacuation just to get the heck out of there.
Yeah.
Because we went and visited and our tanks are still there.
Yeah.
Our gear is still there. Our tents are still there.
Our camouflage.
We went to the Coochie tunnels. We crawled through them. We walked in that and we saw all of the American gear still there because we were just like, we gotta get out. And we left. We left a bunch of stuff behind.
Yeah.
So it's wild.
Yeah.
What do you think is the one thing people will take out of this musical? They go in. What's the one thing that you think will stick with them about the musical?
I hope one of the messages that a lot of people leave with is that love prevails and love is greater.
Emily Bautista and Anthony Festa. Tickets for Miss Saigon are still available for this evening's performance. This is Oklahoma Perspective. For Cox Media Group, I'm Bert Williams.